It's a cruel, cruel world nowadays when you're asking those questions 2 minutes after the World Cups. We've been knocked out of the World Cup. And if you'd find it inside you to find a little bit of compassion for people who are hurting, to just ask the more relevant questions, because I'll tell you, for me, I came here with only one thought in my mind about winning here, and that thought's just disappeared now, not 15, 20 minutes ago. And I know that that's what the papers demand, but perhaps whatever your news outlet is or whatever, should think about people's feelings for a minute. Just chill.
Well, it might be, Dale, the game they play in heaven, but Michael Checker, the now former Wallabies coach, certainly a long way from there. That was his reaction after they lost to the Poms 40-16. And a journo and a man who was in the room, no doubt about it, he's a chief rugby reporter for the Courier-Mail. I wonder if he even asked the question. Jim Tucker, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's pretty tense there, old mate. That wasn't you that delivered that hard hitter, was it?
No, not at all. It was the question on everyone's lips, though, and Michael Checker had essentially set himself up for that question, really. Since last year, when he got the extension into World Cup year, he said, basically, it's glory or bust. I get them to the final, or I get the Wallabies to win the World Cup, or I'm gone. So he set the bar himself, and we've been through enough tortured moments with AFL coaches going mid-season or NRL coaches going before the finals to know it's never a pretty sight when the writing's plainly on the wall, and that's what it was at the Rugby World Cup.
How do we view his legacy then, Jim? He's always been a passionate character, 5 years in charge. How will he be remembered?
That's a really good question. 2015 World Cup got the team to the final against the All Blacks, played some riveting rugby, thrashed England, kicked them out of their own World Cup by beating them by 20 at Twickenham. Superb performance, beat Wales, beat Scotland, beat Argentina, all intense games. So 2015, his stocks were absolutely at their highest. No matter what the passion is, no matter what the gut feeling is, you've got to go on the numbers. And since that time, he's only been Mr. 38% against top nations, 2016 to now. So the record just wasn't there. Hadn't been able to beat the All Blacks consistently, apart from that brilliant win in Perth just a few months ago. So the record there, it wasn't there. And I guess the thing Australians are most upset about is that we were totally outsmarted by England. And to be outsmarted by the Poms, that's a hard one to crack.
Jim, is our expectation of Michael Checker, or the coach of our rugby team nationally, is it realistic about what we want to get out of him? You mentioned some of the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. Is that where our players are at and our playing group is at, or is this a reflection of probably where we are actually at?
It's a reflection of the codes situation. Rugby has struggled for a bit of cut through, and when you rely on one result every 4 years to nourish the entire code, which is have a really successful Rugby World Cup just to put a glow across the whole code, it's a really tough standard to meet, because the domestic competition in Super Rugby is spluttering a little bit. We're not beating the All Blacks, who we play 2-3 times a year. So you just want that glow from that big result of the World Cup. So it's a real high bar that is set, and it's been a complete fail.
Were you surprised by Michael Checker's comments regarding his relationship with the CEO and the chairman? And ultimately, how does that make you feel as a lover of the game, knowing that three of the most important roles in rugby, they're not getting along?
That's a really good question. I think that was a bit of a shock to everyone, that Checker would say, pretty much, I've got no relationship with my CEO, Raylene Castle. You want that to be the closest relationship that you have in your sport. Of course, there's a circuit breaker with Scott Johnson, who's the director of rugby, and Checker gets on very well with him, and he's also one of the selectors. But Checker's always been that sort of volatile, lone wolf, very intelligent, very passionate. A lot of his players will speak extremely fondly of Checker, what they've done and what he's done to enhance their careers. Someone like the former bad boy, James O'Connor, he's come back from the wilderness and played really well this year. He was lost to the game. Checker brought him back into the fold. He's overlooked some personal problems with different players. James Slipper, the prop, has played really well this year. Checker's been very encouraging of him, and he had a cocaine incident in his recent past and had depression. Checker brought him back in the fold brilliantly. So there's a lot of personal and human sides to Michael Checker that are very likeable.
Jim, we've got about 60 seconds before the news, but how much heat should there be on Raylene Castle and the ARU board?
Well, there should be huge heat when we get now to the next decision, which is basically, in an AFL comparison, would you ever put Nathan Buckley as coach of Carlton? Probably never, ever, because it's not a great fit. He's a Carlton great. We've got now the situation, we've got a Kiwi CEO who's probably leaning very strongly towards appointing a New Zealander to coach the Wallabies, and that brings in a fierce, fierce debate of why isn't there an Aussie good enough to coach the Wallabies into this next cycle. So that'll be the next debate, and that's another a real head spinner for rugby to deal with.
It'll be a fascinating watch, Jim, no doubt about it. You deserve a couple of Sapporos, I reckon, over there after this. Let your hair down. Thanks for joining us this morning.
I'm an Asahi man.
All right. Very nicely, Jim. Very nice. I'm sure the Poms will have got their hearts set on a few Asahis. They've got New Zealand. What about a semi-final?
Yes.
Poms, Kiwis. Eddie Jones, speaking of Aussie coaching the English. Wales, South Africa in the other semi-final as well. They don't get much bigger than those four teams, those two matchups there. Meredith Gibbs, ready and waiting. The SEN Newsroom.
10 seconds to go. Bryce Cotton has the game on his hands. He shoots the contested three, and he banks it in. He banks it in with 4 seconds to go. Can Trimble come back? We wait. Here's the shot. No! It rims out, and Perth win by three. 96-93 on the back of some fine Cotton. He has shot the big three, and Perth win. Melbourne 0-3 to start the season.
That is the voice of Anthony Hudson on United Live here at SEN. Fine Cotton. I don't think Dean Vickerman thought it was fine Cotton. Dale is the Melbourne United coach, of course, and he's been good enough to join us this morning. Thanks very much, Dean.
Yeah, no, not so much fine cotton for me.
So take us through it. Gee whiz, I mean, what is it? Three, Zip and three, a combined 2, 3, 5 points. I mean, they've been tight.
Yeah, each one of those games has been, excuse me, a massive shot down the stretch. You know, Mitch Creek hits the first one, Tarico White over in Perth, and then Cotton in this one. You know, he did it to us in the preseason as well. We had a game in Geelong in the preseason, and he banked one from a very similar spot just inside the line. So, you know, probably rated as one of the best closers in our game, a guy that really wants the basketball down the stretch.
Suppose if you had the answer to this, you wouldn't be zipping three, but what is the missing link? Is just a bit of bad luck at the moment? I mean, obviously, when you get into the final and look like you had that game at the weekend under control, is there something you can put your finger on at the moment that has you winless?
Yeah, you know, obviously you go back and it was pretty disrupted preseason with, you know, five guys at the World Cup. Mm. You know, we lose our major assistant coach 2 weeks ago, and then we have the injuries to, you know, four guys at the start of the year, and we finally got Barlow and Sam McDaniels back last night, and still got Casey Prather sitting there. So real chemistry with the group is been something that was great in the US. It grew. But now we're still going to add players. And so right now we lead, or we're second in the league in field goal percentage. We're, you know, second in the league in three-point percentage. We're shooting our free throws over 80%. You know, we're doing some great things, but the possession game right now, too many offensive rebounds for opposition teams, and we're turning the ball over too many times. So we're not far away.
Dean, I like your positivity. There's still a lot of upside after being 0-3. I want to ask you about the trip to the States and what you actually got out of that, and whether you think that that has put you in a position where the extra travel now sit where you do in our league.
Yeah, you know, the timing of it during the season is tough. Obviously, you know, you would prefer it to be a pre-season scheduled event, but you know, we've gone the last 3 years now, and we found the benefits of going and competing against the world's best. Going to see the facilities that they have, learning techniques from different coaches. We just feel like it's a great upskilling of our whole program and our players, and we always want the opportunity to play against, you know, someone better than yourselves. did it have an effect? You know, we've certainly the. I thought we handled the travel really well, and again, it's going to be important. With the times that we've been before, we've found that, you know, this the next week or the week after, there's been some fatigue. So, how we handle that one better going into a double game this week is going to be important.
How did you do it, Dean? Because you played obviously against the Wildcats that grand final rematch on Sunday. You didn't get back from the States until Saturday, didn't you? Only a day before, 24 hours before.
Yeah, we got back in around 10 o'clock, and so we just left the players to themselves on the Saturday. We got a shoot around at 9:30 before the game, and everyone looked pretty good at that point. You know, they got business class. They got some pretty good sleep on the plane. So, yeah, we don't want to make any excuses. We, you know, it was our decision to go and do that, and more than happy to go and challenge ourselves against the world's best.
Have you seen extra fatigue with someone like a Chris Golding, who's represented the country going back a couple of months, then he's got this extra travel? Has he had enough time to rest and just get away, even mentally, before starting a new season?
Yeah, it's always a challenge with the internationals. Again, Alex Pledger, Tohi and Shay Ely as well. You know, those guys were all in national team campaigns. And anytime you're away for, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks, like some of those guys were, you know, Dave Barlow as well. Yep. So, you know, it's never ideal. I think, you know, times I was in New Zealand, also it was just about trying to keep them up. And there'll be a point in the season where you can really, you know, try and get them some rest as well.
How much more improvement are you expecting from the team? There's been a few changes, and I know a year's a long time, but you lose someone like Casper Ware as your point guard, and as good as he is in the competition. How long do you think that new continuity with the new starting five will take?
Yeah, well, you know, again, you know, Casey Prather, we expect to be in that lineup as well. So we still, you know, he's probably still 2 weeks away. And I think, you know, starting, you know, Barwell probably will possibly go into that starting lineup. Joe Akul's been, you know, fantastic as well on the NBA trip and some games before. So we've got a lot of options there. Yeah, it's just about us, you know, doing a lot of little things right now. We had turnovers and screening down the stretch. You know, we don't quite throw the ball in the air well enough to a Sean Long at the moment. You know, there's just all the little skill areas that we've got to improve on.
Dean, I know you're worried about your own backyard, but there's another team in the neighbourhood now, the South East Melbourne Phoenix. I mean, does that pour salt into an open wound when they're undefeated at 3-0, the new kids on the block in a two-team town?
Yeah, you know, I'm absolutely happy for Simon Mitchell. He's doing a great job over there. You know, they've had their injuries as well with Ty Wesley, and they've handled them really well so far. So, yeah, you know, the competition in town is you know, going to be good for basketball, and, you know, hopefully both of our teams can get to the finals.
And you've got the New Zealand Breakers, I think, this Saturday, haven't you, at Melbourne Arena? So I think they're also winless at the moment. You got them up next?
Yeah, New Zealand next. You know, they played a double against Sydney on the weekend and dropped both. And then we go to Cairns. We play a game in Cairns on Monday. So, you know, quick turnaround to get up there.
And what is the morale like amongst the playing group? Just they're obviously human. They wouldn't have envisaged they'd be zipping three. How are they going sort of morale-wise?
Yeah, you know, we know we're a growing group, and we know we've had injuries and we've had the NBA. We had all these things, and we could have won every one of those games. So, you know, I guess that's the frustration with the group right now, that, you know, we just haven't quite got over the line. And now, you know, it's just we just got to win one of these ones and just get that winning feeling and make sure that those winning habits are, you know, continuing consistently. But, yeah, no, the group's fantastic. You know, they're obviously really disappointed last night, but they'll turn up to work today and look for ways to get better.
Oh, fantastic. I'm sure the wheel will turn. Dean will be here to celebrate with you when it does. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, cheers.
All the best.
Heavy Company 2 on a Monday morning here at SEM Breakfast, powered, as always, by Melbourne Airport Parking. Now from under $10 a day, book now at melbourneairport.com.au. Sam Edmund, Nick Del Sando in the chair for the week. What a season it was, Del, from the Brisbane Lions. Second on the ladder.
Spectacular.
An amazing rise. Not the postseason they would have wanted, going out in straight sets, but they have been busy plotting a return.
Scheming.
Scheming. Tell you a man who's a head schemer up there. He's the general manager of football. David, the schemer noble. Welcome, Nobes.
G'day, Sam. G'day, Nick.
The pleasure to have your company. It's been a busy time for you, actually, didn't you? As well as the end of the season and all the exit interviews and the trade period, didn't you have a wedding squished in there somewhere? You were a new father-in-law?
I did, yes. Had a about halfway through trade period, that Friday after the previous week, a daughter got married up here. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day. It was amazing.
Doesn't the bride's family pay, or is that we going back too far?
I might be going back a bit too far there.
Put you on the spot.
Very nice. Hey, tell us about the delistings that that hit the news yesterday. Ben Keys, Josh Walker and Ryan Bastanac. Seen, at least with the former two, raised a couple of eyebrows. Can you take us through the decisions to delist those three gents?
Yeah, look, it's I guess when you in your overall structure, I think when you get to this time of year, as you know, Sam, it's always difficult, but you've got to make an assessment. You know, we're bound by the rules to make some changes. We'll have some sort of further updates through this week as to, you know, additional changes, what we're going through. But, you know, Josh has been pretty unlucky. He's been able to come in and play both forward and back. Ben's, you know, developed, we feel. But unfortunately, you know, there's just others that we feel are ahead of them. We feel that the, you know, the structure and what we've done in the last sort of year or two just forces us to make some decisions. And, you know, I guess internal competition has been pretty hot for us in the last 18 months, I would say, rather than just the last 12 months. So it's not a decision that you make, you know, just over one particular short period. It's a decision that, you know, we make over a period of time. And in that assessment, and I think what's happened is that internally there's been a lot of elevation of our players have continued to improve. They've worked hard to change and adapt their game, you know, to a higher level. And unfortunately, you know, someone has to make an assessment, and we just feel that there are other guys in front of that group.
Dave, you've been on the record previously, or the football club has, about the phases that you're going through, about going to the draft and getting certain style of players in and getting youth into your football club. You feel like you've ticked that off, and then you have the year that you do in 2019. But then you bring in someone like a Grant Birch, and we automatically say, well, there's Luke Hodge. That's the replacement for Luke Hodge. How do you see Grant Birchall and his importance for the leadership compared to his on-field performance?
Yeah, it's a good question, Dale, and I think it's probably too simplistic to just assess us as needing, you know, or feeling like there's a Luke Hodge replacement. I think what Luke brought to our group was the understanding of what it takes to get to that next level, the imparting of his knowledge on field, you know, particularly around the more the questioning, I think, as to getting a guy to think through tough situations, 2 minutes to go, what are we doing, what's the structure look like, stick to your role, that type of thing. So we felt that, you know, if you looked at probably the way the two play, you know, Luke was sort of at the end and we needed that experience. Birch, we feel, has still got some good footy to play for us, and that need in Birch's case is more the run carry, whereas the need for when we looked at Luke was more the on-field leader, the on-field coach direction that we needed our guys to understand. So a little bit different in the needs that both bring. And as I said, I think it's too simple to just feel like it's all, you know, to assume that we're looking for a Luke Hodge replacement with Grant.
We think we know what Luke Hodge is and what he brings, but what have you seen as a reflection of Luke Hodge being at that footy club for the other players and their leadership? So he moves on. This next group of leaders, and includes the captains as well, I guess, and this young group of leaders coming through. Have you just seen this group come out of themselves and just handle leadership situations a lot better since Luke Hodge has been there?
Yeah, I think it's the calmness, Del. You know what it's like when you get to sort of big games, and it's not about trying to be helpful in the manner of, look, I can kick this goal or I can get that clearance. It's really sticking to the task of what your role is, you know, getting your structure right. When it's your turn, it's your turn. But I think it's the calmness and the matureness that Luke, you know, passes on to those guys that, hey, you know, you guys are good enough. You're able to close out tight games when we need to. We're able to hold on to small leads when the game's really tight in the middle of, you know, a third quarter. So that's the aspect that we think that he's really helped develop, calmness in tight situations.
And Nobes, tell us about the season. To go from 15th to 2nd is an incredible rise, and a few people have made the comparisons, I guess, with Melbourne from the year prior. Now, we know, obviously, the path that Melbourne took this year. How wary of that example are you, and guarding against what would seem to be some players perhaps thinking, well, it's just going to happen again?
Yeah, it's. I think when we went from five to what we did this year, too, Sam, you know, we lost, I think it was seven games, you know, sort of under a couple of goals. So if we'd have won three or four of those, you'd probably finish on about nine. And then going from nine to 14, 15, 16 is probably not that big a jump. So we felt that that way that we wanted to play was really evolving last year, and then it continued to really mature this year with the way that our coaches structured our game plan a little bit different. It sort of tightened a few things up, and so therefore there was, you know, at times less risk with what we did with the ball. So the players are really conscious that, you know, last year's gone. That's done and dusted, and it needs to restart again. You know, they've gone away to enjoy a break. We've dealt with the disappointment of the two losses, but at the same time, we can't not understand and really celebrate the way that we went about the year. So whilst the end was disappointing, there was a lot that we took away in a positive manner, and the way Chris summarised that was certainly a, you know, challenging the players to come back ready to go again.
Mm. Dave, trade period's gone. We look forward to the national draft in about a month's time. You've got picks 16, 21, 34, 48, 52 and 72. Have you identified the type of player or what could possibly be around the pick 16 for what you think you need in the short term and the long term?
Yeah, we have. And I think the draft's now changed a bit, Dale, with, you know, the capacity to have live trading.
Yeah.
You can actually target needs now. The draft was always bringing the talent in, and the trade period was always about your needs. Well, I actually saw that shift a little bit last year where clubs being able to manoeuvre their way through. So we've identified probably four or five in the draft period. We'd like to get a bit higher. We think that would certainly help. I think there's probably several clubs that would like to get a little bit higher. But, yeah, we've certainly started to look at what the group of picks we've got at the moment would deliver versus moving up, trying to get up in that first round, pushing one of your second rounds back a bit further and even into the future. So there's still lots of scheming, as you guys have said, that continues to go on now.
Dave, can you just take us inside that world just a tiny bit? I think there's so many people that are interested in trade period, but also now the live trading. We know that for a game, for example, the amount of preparation, and some teams will call it, you know, game analysis or war games, where you play at pretty much every scenario that'll happen in a game of football, so you don't get caught out. How do you go about doing that with, say, live picks, because it is on the fly and you're not quite sure what other clubs may offer you or what other clubs may accept from you? How do you play out all those scenarios, and how many will you have up your sleeve ready to go on the night?
Yeah, I think you try to assess where each club is, I think, Del, and looking at Dom Ambrogio still, you know, having lots of conversations with other clubs and list managers about where their delistings finish and fall, how many picks, what are they after? Are they after a certain type of player? And so I think you have a number of different range. So we might have four or five different options coming into sort of pick 16 with various clubs. You might have to activate around something else that's evolved above you. You've got to have an understanding of the index value and what that looks like going forward. Your recruiting guys have got to have a really clear understanding of this year's group and next year's. If you're going into that future trading, we'll have a data guy that will help us in assessing what type of deal. So if we're trading out pick 16, what option would look the best for that? Is it to move up to 10, or is it just to move to 12? So, yeah, there's lots of planning now that needs to go into that draft period. It's really become more an extension, I think, of the trade period, more so than a traditional draft as we've known it.
And, Dave, have you got any academy kids in line there? Can you educate us in that space? You've got a lot of late picks there. Have you got any academy prospects in mind for this draft?
Yeah, we have. We've got a couple, Sam. Kaleen Coleman came through in particular, and he played really well throughout this year. Noah Cumberland's another one that got invited down to the draft combine. So got a couple of guys that we felt have really delivered and developed over the last sort of couple of years. Kadeen played as a 19-year-old without an EFL this year, but we're still able to match the bid if someone comes in for him. So, yeah, we've got a couple that we've positioned those couple of back-end picks specifically to have a look at that.
And I think we mentioned Melbourne earlier. We know that the off-season injuries they had going back to the start of this year or late last year, I think you guys have got a pretty much a clean bill of health, haven't you? Have you need any surgeries for any of your guys?
No, I think Marcus Adams is the only one had a little bit of a clean out in that knee that he had some troubles through the year. But yeah, our medicos have done an amazing job this year. The high performance guys deliver them really fit and strong, and the medicos were able to work hard through that injury prevention program through the year. So yeah, no, we come into the start of the year with at this stage, unless something happens in the break, with a full bill of health.
Dave, do you track your players like I do on social media? I've just noticed that there's a healthy group of Brisbane Lions players at a pool party in Vegas at the moment. Are you just carefully stalking them as well?
Yeah, we are, Del. There's been a couple of tours. There was a sports tour that we're going over to look at a bit of the basketball.
Of course,
and
they were.
And there was a social tour. Yeah. So, we're tracking them pretty close.
Bit of work and pleasure. I like it.
Yes.
Good on you, Dave. Really appreciate it. Always generous with SEN. And thanks very much for your time this morning. Best of luck for the draft.
Lovely. Thanks, guys.
David Noble there. Good on you, the GM of football. Lovely bloke up at the Brisbane Lions. Can see